Boston. The date is July 23rd, 1993, and this is tape 48, side one. Going on to some of the other issues that were before the legislature in 1985, and I believe that these are still issues that were passed, or legislation that was passed in 1985, there was legislation that required state colleges and universities to establish grievance procedures that meet minimum state standards. What was that about?
That was I'm trying to think of the word. It was a woman that was being, as higher education, was not being promoted because she was a woman. I'm putting it rather crudely. I think she may have even won her case, I'm not sure. But that's what it related to. I'm trying to remember the right terminology, but anyway, that's what created that piece of legislation.
There was also a bill establishing a holiday for Martin Luther King, and you supported that. And there was, I know I have somewhere down here.
There's a story about that.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
You got it somewhere.
I know I do have it here somewhere, but we'll go ahead.
Actually vetoed the bill to start with, or indicated, vetoed the bill to start with. My problem was that it didn't relate to whether or not we should recognize Martin Luther King. I had no problem with that. The core of the problem was that the Republican Boys Union wanted another day of vacation, and that's what I had a problem with. And I said, we can't afford it. Paid vacation. And if we'd work it around where that would not be the case, that didn't mean that we would not make that a holiday. But there were some other holidays that we'd take away. See what I'm trying to say? And that was my argument.
What wasn't the plan combine Washington and Lincoln into a president's?
Yeah, I find that most distressing. I really do. And we do that at the national level, too. They call President's Day. And when I say distressing, I think that Abraham Lincoln and George Washington deserved their days. But they don't have a day. They have this anonymous President's Day. Mm-hmm. But Martin Luther King has his day. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I'm demeaning Martin Luther King. I'm saying that Washington and Lincoln certainly deserved their day. And that's my problem.
Was this before or after the controversy that arose on this issue in Arizona with the governor there?
This is before. Yeah, that governor of Arizona was really dumb. I mean, he was saying there ought not to be Martin Luther King Day. That's not what I said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I had no problem with that whatsoever. Because this man really did something that I felt was very important. We talked about, the discrimination against blacks, which even continues today. And so I thought he was great person, and did a great job in what I thought was a very important field. But the governor down there, he just didn't think there should be a Martin Luther King Day. Well, that's a difference of opinion. I certainly don't agree with it.
Right.
So mine was, and that's how these things become misinterpreted. Again, we talked earlier about divestiture in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
My problem wasn't trying to do what we could to eliminate apartheid. My problem was a problem of using public employee savings, if you will, and decided what's going to be done with it without the public employee being involved. And that was the problem. But those things become misunderstood. He's against blacks, or he's against Martin Luther King. But you have to face up to those. You have to say, some might say, gosh, I don't want to go through this. And so they would do some things that really shouldn't be done. I was going to do it. I know ahead of time. going to divert for just a moment. My affirmative action officer was Kay Turan. And we had several discussions. She did a good job for me. And we had several discussions. Kay, I'd say every once in a while, really is a shame. She got the job because she deserved it. She was qualified for it. She did do a good job. But a lot of people would look and say, oh, I know why she's affirmative action officer. First, she's a female. And second, she's black. That's why she got the job. That's the unfairness about it. And she realized that. That's one of those things you have to live with. But she got the job because she was qualified for the job. But so many people would look at it. So, you know, because she's female, because she's black. And so we get back to my discussion on Martin Luther King Day and the apartheid thing. You know, I know how the perceptions are going to be, but what's right is right. So you just go with it.
Did you feel that eventually didn't get resolved the way that you wanted it to, though, did it?
Not entirely, no. Mm-hmm.
And they did combine the President's Day.
Yeah.
And is King's holiday a paid holiday or not?
Yeah.
It is a paid holiday.
It's official paid holiday.
At what point did you decide not to veto that then?
Well, you know, you finally get it worked around where you could really negotiate it. Mm-hmm. The best way, you know, I told him I couldn't afford it. The government can't afford it, another paid holiday. I can't remember the exact details. I remember the discussion. I remember what my concern was. How we finally came down.
Did the media present that issue in a way that you felt was acceptable?
I think we got through it, and that people did understand. did understand what I was doing. Mm-hmm. That's all you can hope for. Mm-hmm. Made a separation between the issues.
Mm-hmm. Well, going on to another bill that passed the legislature but you vetoed, which deals exactly with the same topic, was forbidding the investment of state funds and banks making direct loans to South Africa.
Yeah.
And you've already discussed
pretty,
that.
Pretty well covered that.
Yeah. Also, there was a bill extending the prohibition against cities adopting rent controls. And I don't know which cities were doing that, whether that was a Cannon Beach issue or a Portland issue or...
I have no recollection of that.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And then finally on bills that passed, you signed legislation making gallery owners responsible for damage or theft of artworks they display and requires a list of sellers to artists and consent for the use of art for promotional purposes. And we've discussed a little bit of this.
A little bit, but not a great deal. That was actually a lot more controversial than it sounded, only it was limited to the art world.
Mm-hmm.
Quite controversial. And this was a matter of art galleries taking advantage of artists. So what we really had was artists on one side and art galleries on the other, and the artists depended on art galleries. Tough thing. Tough for the artist and tough for making the decision, respective. I came down on the side really of the artist, and I had some prominent art gallery owners that I knew and
mm-hmm.
were not very happy about the whole thing. Yet it all worked out.
Mm-hmm.
It all worked out. Because there was some taking advantage, and we can understand that. The artist is yearning to have a place to show their art, yearning to sell their art so maybe they become famous someday. And so that was the hammer that the art galleries had held over the artist.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if you'd say from time to time take advantage of that situation. And so you had to kind of level the ball field a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that the art community appreciated your stand in that?
I tell you, I think that the artists didn't really understand it, many of them didn't understand it, probably didn't quite care about it, probably maybe didn't even know about it, but the art community in the sense of galleries knew about it very much. So if there's a remembrance of it, it would be by those who didn't like what I did, more than those who would like what I did.
Well, that must be frustrating for you too at times, to have to do something like that.
But you see, if you start counting votes, you're getting in trouble. What's the right thing to do? So, you know, you do these things, that's how all this misinterpretation can come about. You do all these things, you know, as I told you before when I vetoed that bill, remember we talked about the wine and no central warehousing, and all my friends were on that side. I mean, these are people I knew that supported me, that gave me money. They were friends, people that I actually knew, and I'm going south on them. But, you know, if you say, okay, they're my friends, and so I'm going to violate what I think is an appropriate philosophy of government. No, I'm not going to violate what I think is an appropriate rule of government. I think is the right way. So, and as I say, I sleep at night.
Well, going on to bills that didn't pass, and these are of 2,200 bills introduced in the legislature that session. There was a bill requiring separate smoking and non-smoking areas on the job that didn't pass.
Yeah.
That eventually did pass, though, didn't it?
Yeah.
But it didn't at this point. And we've discussed some of this before.
Discussed smoking,
yeah. As you're putting out your cigarette.
As I put out my cigarette.
Okay. Need we say more?
No, I think we've covered this pretty well.
Okay. And I think that we've covered this as well, but there was a bill that didn't pass making the use of seatbelts mandatory for adult motorists.
Yeah, that didn't pass, but as we know, it's not
it did. Right. And a bill banning field burning.
Yeah.
Was that an outright, in 1985, an outright prohibition of field burning entirely?
That's what they were getting at.
Uh-huh.
I remember we talked about turning field burning back to the how you treat everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's air pollution. Mm-hmm. And turned it into what we call smoke management. And I really wanted to stay away from that whole, you know, do it in an orderly way, the way it had been done with everybody else, every other industry. This industry had to be agriculture rather than a building or a smokestack.
Another bill that lost was forbidding state funding of abortions.
Yeah.
So having lost, then you didn't have an opportunity to either veto or sign it then?
No, but I think we covered that pretty well earlier. Saying my position was not acceptable to either side. Just to restate again that I am opposed to unrestricted abortion. That's who I am. And I do truly believe that. But as governor, I did fund abortion. And my rationalization was that it is legal. I don't happen to like it, but it is legal. So why should just those who can afford it get an abortion? That doesn't please anybody, but that's how I think.
Another bill was trying to ban plastic milk jugs.
Yeah. I laugh. So I really have some strong feelings about plastic and the fact that it doesn't biodegrade and all the rest of it. I think way back then, I've already told you that we've done a pretty good job on air and water, but we've done a lousy job on ground pollution, and we continue to do a pretty lousy job.
So did you support this then?
I would, but it didn't get ground
pollution. Yeah. And also, they wanted to add wine coolers to the bottle bill.
Yeah, same thing. They keep wanting to add things.
And did you support that?
I would.
You wouldn't have supported that. Why wouldn't you have supported that?
Well, I just think, I guess basically my problem is that it goes way back to the time of the bottle bill, and I think I mentioned it way back in the tape, that the one real fault with the bottle bill was that we didn't compensate the collectors,
mm-hmm.
and the collectors are the grocery stores. And, you know, just add another burden just because you feel good about it. Mm-hmm. And actually, it's working out just as well. Now, I know we're on a recycling program here, and that's the best way to get about doing this job. I put my stuff out on the curb on the recycling. And, although I was telling my wife that, you know, what would help recycling is some of these manufacturers would put their labels on so you could at least wash them off. They go along with
yes,
with stick-em stuff.
Absolutely.
And
you have to soak them, and even when you do, it's hard to get them off.
That's right. And, you know, the manufacturers would just put labels on like they used to that will come off.
Right.
I think that would facilitate.
Some of them do, but some of them don't.
Yeah.
It's
little things like that. It's interesting because I think there's a lot of non-recycling because it's too much of a nuisance
mm-hmm.
To get those labels off.
Mm-hmm.
So they just throw them in garbage cans.
I saw just recently that the recyclers were not requiring that you take off. For a while, they were requiring that you take off the labels. I still try to take them off, but now I noticed that in the last literature that I got from Metro or somebody that said that you didn't need to take the labels
well,
off.
That'll help immensely. And I wonder about that because obviously they're going to heat this stuff.
Yeah, it'll just burn off.
To recycle it, it's got to burn.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, I thought to myself, there's a lot of people who don't recycle because it's a nuisance. There's even a nuisance in terms of cans because they want you to cut out both ends and flatten it out.
Right.
And a lot of people aren't willing to go through that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Labels are a little easier on cans because most of those come off.
Right.
But, you know, so you really have to wash them and cut both ends off and stop on them. And, you know, we've got to make it as easy as we can for people to decide. Anyway.
There was another bill that was trying to push up the date of organs May primary. And I remember this was an issue off and on in terms of where Oregon fits in with the rest of the Northwest, with California and respective to the rest of the country.
That's just merely a matter of getting attention.
Uh-huh.
It has nothing to do with the election.
But is the attention, getting attention a good thing?
I don't know what good it does.
In terms of getting our issues of Oregon, out into the national attention?
You don't really get your views. They're only paying attention to the primary. And we're talking presidential primaries.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what we're talking about there. The world is not waiting to see who won in the third district, legislative district. This doesn't hit national news. So it's really, mostly presidential, once in a while senatorial, but, you know, on the federal side, on the national level. And I didn't make any sense to me. You know, let's do it at our convenience, not because we think we want to get some national attention, because it doesn't really make any difference.
Or getting the attention of the candidates of those issues.
That is true. And, actually, the candidate that comes in and targets Oregon mm-hmm. has a good chance. We lost Oregon, I'm a Republican, we lost Oregon both times from George Bush. Both times, George Bush did not target. In other words, targeting means sending money to put on a real campaign.
Mm-hmm.
The opponents, Dukakis and Clinton, did. And so they had a good campaign going. We couldn't crank one up because, you know, we just couldn't put enough money together to get that job done. So that's what targeting means. I mean, that's mm-hmm. what, we think it's important.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't there an effort during the same period to have a joint Northwestern primary?
Yeah.
How did you feel about that?
Again, the same thing. Let's do what we want to do. All this was just a matter of get attention.
Right.
That's what all it was. And I'm not interested in doing things for that reason.
Uh-huh.
We should do it at our convenience. And if we like what we're doing, let's stay with what we're doing.
Do you think there is a time that's better to have a primary in terms of where it falls in the election campaign?
No. There are some that want to shorten the period between mm-hmm. primary and general. I'm saying it doesn't make any difference. Washington has a primary in September and the general in November. But don't tell me those people are campaigning in January, because they are. So, I mean, again, for what purpose are we doing all of this? Shorten it. You're not gonna shorten it. You may shorten the period between elections, but you're not gonna shorten all of the TV ads and all the rest of that stuff that people get tired of.
There was another bill that tried to legalize prostitution.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I'm not really quite sure about that. On the one hand, you think, okay, you legalize it. Prostitutes have to be, have physical, you know, you have some kind of control over the, at least the health standards. It's going to happen. You waste a lot of time and money by making it illegal. And yet, you still weigh that against prostitution really is not as good a societal goal. And I think I probably would end up in the latter area, although I see some sense in legalization.
Actually, that surprises me. I would not have thought you would see any benefit in legalizing it.
Yeah, but I can see the benefit of it. I just think I'm down to, in terms of moral standards.
Right.
And that's where I probably would end up, but I certainly can see how one would rationalize it. I think they were acceptable arguments.
Somehow I have a hard time seeing that fit with you.
Always have to figure out what. You know, I'm always willing, and I'll tell you another story that relates to what I just told you. Vern Cook is my example. But there'd be others that I call Vern Cooks. And they'd get up and he had his position. And he didn't care about anything. That was his position, and that was it, and there was no one thing. And I got to admiring people like that. And I go back to the time when I took a philosophy class in college, and I often said, hey, I wish they hadn't taken that, because you begin to see both sides.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
He didn't see both sides, so he didn't have any problem with the other side.
Well, Vern Cook is still around, isn't he?
Oh, yes.
And he's running for the top
sheriff
of county commissioner. You don't think so? No. Are you supporting one person or another in that?
Yeah, I'm not involved because I don't even live in the county.
Right. You're in Washington County.
I have to tell you, I'm not sure the tape really deserves this, but I'm not sure we'd be winners in either case.
Well, Vern Cook has always had very strong opinions, hasn't he?
But you know, really, this is when you say to me you're surprised that I can see the other side, that I have to laugh, because I remember saying, God, wouldn't that be nice, not to be fettered with no, you know, looking at both sides of things.
Right.
God, wouldn't that be nice? Come.
Well, but in a way you have said that before, haven't you, about your set of principles and a little common sense.
That's right. That doesn't mean, however, that I don't see another side of the view. And when you ask me, well, how history is going to treat me, then I guess I pretty well said it, that somebody else is going to have a different view.
Right.
And I know that. I'm not sure what it's going to be, but they're going to have a different view. I just went through something which kind of relates to it. I was reading the Oregon Historical Quarterly. Mm-hmm. This is an interview with Ted Halleck, McPherson, Andrew Richmond, Stafford Hansel. Pretty much on what we're doing.
On land use.
And they made, Ted Halleck made an unequivocal statement that I was opposed to land use, and then later on that I was going to kill the bill And I wrote a pretty nasty letter to the society, because I consider the Quarterly is really part of history. People are going to look it up, and that's not what my position was at all. And I hate to leave it just like that. Now, I don't know what can be done about it. It's in the Quarterly, it's printed, and they don't write letters to the editor in the Quarterly. No. But I was offended by that.
Well, couldn't you write an article about land use yourself?
Could. I don't know. I sent it to the editor of the Quarterly. We'll see what happens. That's been a few days ago. But I was very indignant about it because that's not my position at all. Matter of fact, I said, anybody that lives in Raleigh Hills has got to be for land use plan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I lived there when the Bertha Beeman Highway was a two-lane, mostly residential street. Now it's four-lane commercial.
Yeah.
You know, there was a dairy farm across the street from where I was living.
Over where the Fred Meyer was.
Fred Meyer is now. So, you know, when I first moved down to Raleigh Hills, there was two Greek grocers, service station, and a tavern. That's all that was down there. Well, of course, anyone knows what Raleigh Hills is like. So, you know, anybody that lives in Raleigh Hills has got to be for land use planning.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And then to have this statement so unequivocal, very unequivocal. Like, it wasn't like I think he was against land use plan. I was, that's what Ted Hallock says. I was going to kill the bill, that's what Ted Hallock says. And that's not my position at all. Incidentally, that isn't it. It becomes very interesting because it shows the paranoia that goes along. There were things in there that I could not philosophically accept. I could not philosophically accept a regional government doing land use planning. Remember we talked about
that. That's right.
It's just not in me.
The Council of Governments, the COGS?
The COGS. It's just not in me. And I know the sensitivity of land use planning. I know about that.
Mm-hmm.
And we are Westerners, and that's why people came out here for land. And they put high stakes on their ownership. I know all of that. I'm sensitive to it. So, you know, I had to get rid of some of that. Well, when you start tinkering around, that means, ergo, you're against it. I'm not against the bill. I'm against some of the things in the bill.
Yeah.
But there he is. You see another person's interpretation of history.
When Senate Bill 100 went through, and I guess I could look this up right now, you voted which way?
For it.
You voted for it. Well, I can't imagine anybody doing responsible research on that issue that would not look at the vote and then also look at your record as governor in terms of that.
I would hope so. But, you know, that's something I can't take a chance on because I feel very strong about it. I actually used the fact that we had statewide land use planning mm-hmm. as one of my pro arguments mm-hmm. for why people ought to come to Oregon.
Mm-hmm. But I think that's generally known, isn't it?
Part of my package.
Isn't that generally?
Well, I don't know. It's hard for me to tell. I don't know who knows all of that.
Uh-huh.
But that was part of my package. Mm-hmm. It was part of the package that related to the productivity of Oregonians and their loyalty, and transportation, and you know, all of these things, available power. These were all part of my bag of tools mm-hmm. trying to tell people why they ought to come to Oregon. And land use planning was one of them. But first of all, you know Ted and and he does kind of take off a little bit. But there was I used the word paranoia in my letter. That's kind of demonstration of the paranoia. You know, don't touch a hair on my chinny chin chin, you know, but if the hair's out of place, I gotta.
Yeah.
And even in Senate Bill 100 was first introduced, would allow the state to transfer its land use planning to a regional planning body. I mean, we're getting further away. It isn't just a matter of a region within the state. It would be a matter of like a Region 10 up in Seattle
mm-hmm.
to do land use planning in Oregon. Well, you know, I'm going to go off like a rocket because I can't have something like that.
Yeah,
and I don't happen to believe, and I've said to many people, you know, show me the rape and pillage. We didn't have Senate Bill 100 until 1975. Now show me all the rape and pillage in Oregon. Yes, 82nd Avenue. Yes, Raleigh Hills. But where's the rape and pillage anywhere else? I don't see it. Some of these things got real hysterical. In partner in our Multnomah County, I forgot, they had a size of a lot, which is pretty good.